Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Kinchana Vittaya. Nivritta Guna Vrittaye. Atmaramaya Santaya Kaivalya Pataye Namaha. Translation. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and the master of the monists. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. Therefore, a living being cannot be, in the real sense of the term, a renouncer. A living being renounces something for gaining something more valuable. A student sacrifices his childish proclivities to gain better education. A servant gives up his job for a better job. Similarly, a devotee renounces the material world not for nothing, but for something tangible and spiritual value. Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami and others gave up their worldly pomp and prosperity for the sake of the service of the Lord. They were big men in the worldly sense. The Goswamis were ministers in the government service of Bengal. And Srila Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of a big zamindar of his time. But they left everything to gain something superior to what they previously possessed. The devotees are generally without material prosperity, but they have a very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord. There's a nice story about Srila Sanatan Goswami. He had a touchstone, and this stone was left in a pile of refuse. A needy man took it, but later on wondered why the valuable stone was kept in such a neglected place. He therefore asked Sanatan for the most valuable thing, and then he was given the holy name of the Lord. Akinchana means one who has nothing to give materially. A factual devotee or mahatma does not give anything material to anyone because he has already left all material assets. He can, however, deliver the supreme assets, namely the personality of Godhead, because he is the property of a factual devotee. The touchstone of Sanatan Goswami was thrown in the rubbish, which was thrown in the rubbish, was not the property of the Goswami. Otherwise, it would have been kept in such a place. This specific example is given for neophyte devotees just to convince them that material hankerings and spiritual advancement go ill together. Unless one is able to see everything as spiritual in relation with the Supreme Lord, one must always distinguish between spirit and matter. A spiritual master like Srila Sanatan Goswami, although personally able to give, to see everything as spiritual, set this example for us because we have no spiritual vision. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurmulatam yena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam yena bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Adadanas Janam Dantair Idamyache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Dulisham Janma Janmani Vairagya Yurbhakti Risham Priyatnai Apayama Manadipsamandam Kripamburiya Paraduka Duki Tanatanastam Prabhumasvayami Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyashta Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Rama Hare Hare. If everyone can please mute their phone. I think you need to press number 6, then I can hear the background. Well, greetings from Passaic Falls, upstate New York, where Sachi Sutta and Kaylee Lita have provided me a humble residence in the country. And yesterday, they organized a really grand program. I think it's called the Global Mala for Peace. It's celebrated or held worldwide. And it starts with, and it was, I think there must have been, at least 40, 50 people that came, which was really good. And it starts with 108 Surya Namaskars, which people do. And the place was really set up very beautifully for this. And then I got a chance to give a talk on what is peace. And then we had prasadam. And then we had 108 minutes of kirtan. So I'm seeing these programs create a wonderful access to share Krishna consciousnesses. Srila Prabhupada has so clearly delineated the Vedas, the pure knowledge. I think the problem, though, in sharing it is creating situations where people could feel comfortable to access it in a very natural way. So it was very wonderful in that sense, and it was really nice. And on Wednesday, unfortunately, I couldn't give class. We had Radhastami again in the city in this Radha Damodar temple that's in a big yoga studio. And the day after, I went to the yoga studio in the morning to chant my rounds in the Radha Damodar temple, and it's unbelievable how packed that is from 6 in the morning to 9:30. I mean, when I started, before the people came in the temple to get out, there was practically no way. Just row after row of people doing yoga, and you go out in the hall, and there's other people just waiting for a spot to get in. But we had that program on Wednesday, and it was really, very nicely done. And started at 6 o'clock. We had an hour, about 45 minutes of kirtan, and Abhishek started, and then kirtan continued for another 45 minutes. Spoke briefly on Radharani, then we had Artik, and then Prashadam, and it was so nice, because Kastuba told me, he said that there's about 20 yoga people that were interested that came. Most of the ones that came from Janmashtami, very quality people who live a disciplined life, and seem to be very open-hearted. And it was interesting, because Kastuba told me that we don't have to cook that much because, these yoga people, they don't eat a lot at night because, they're there basically starting from 6:30 in the morning. But the devotees did really wonderfully. It was a very nice rice with cumin and black pepper and halava. And Kulpavritcha brought malpuras with the kind of like donuts and strawberry and yogurt sauce, you know. And Jai Subhadra made, you know, a nice cheese sabji. And somebody that know these people, and Kishori Radha and her husband, they made this Gujarati chickpea bread with Danya Chutney, Don Mohan and his wife, Kamini. They brought these dal paratas very finely. And some other thing. And it was just amazing how much these people ate. And because, you know, the Ashtanga yoga, it's silent. Even the teacher doesn't speak. He just adjusts the body. And I mean, it's a very, very disciplined approach. And the contrast with kirtan and taking prasadam. But it was just so nice. And the devotees were serving the prasadam. And people were so appreciative. And they ate so much. I was shocked. And they were saying to me, it was you know, it was reminiscent, you know the mood, even when I first came to Krishna consciousness, where people were asking, you know, legitimately, what is in this food? It's so special. And it was just so nice. And afterwards, sitting and talking and sharing with the people, so that was nice. And I spoke something about Radharani. I'd like to also speak something today, because on Wednesday I was there, but something briefly, and I do want to get into the text that we're discussing. Of course, I did find when I was speaking about Radharani, about 5 or 10 minutes into the lecture, I kind of realized that, almost, I have to be frankly honest, that it's a very esoteric subject, and I kind of had confidence, the way I was preparing it, that I would be able to explain in a way that the people would be able to appreciate. And I kind of halfway figured, well, this is not as easy as I thought. But somehow the people still appreciated the lecture. But what I did is I began with a meditation, and I asked people to meditate on the person they love most. And to make them a vase of flowers, any flowers you could pick. And then, you know, so the people would meditate on that, you know, the person they love and making a vase of flowers, etc. And then I asked them if it was colorful, if it was fragrant, if it was decorative. And, you know, of course, everyone said yes. And the point I was trying to demonstrate is that when you love someone, that love is transformed into the most beautiful objects of the senses. And when people experience what you've offered to their senses in terms of beauty and fragrance and form and taste, etc., they are not only having a sensual experience, but more important than that, they're having an emotional experience, because they're experiencing your love expressed in that way. And I try to explain Radharani in those terms, that she is the love for Krishna personified. And therefore, she is the most beautiful, fragrant, shapely, in every way. And that's what Radharani is. It's Krishna is the Shaktiman. He's the possessor of all potencies, and Radharani is the Shakti. Although they can't be separated. As it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can't separate the scent from the musk. So they're actually one in that sense. But it's the Shakti. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Purna Shakti, the full potency. And I tried to explain what Shakti is. Shakti is energy to please the source of that energy. And I just described it. And therefore, the ultimate sense behind Shakti is love, because it's for the pleasure of the beloved. It is Shakti, her intelligence, her jnana, Shakti. Radharani is a scholar in the art of garland making. And of course, because she's the embodiment of love, and the very nature of love is that it captures another person's heart in such a way that the other person wants to subordinate themselves to your desires and wishes. So therefore, Radharani, her 25th quality is she always keeps Krishna under her control. Therefore, she's Madan Mohan Mohini, the controller of the controller of the controller of Cupid. I also tried to explain that in our line, the Shakti, or the Purna Shakti, Radharani, takes precedence even over the possessor of the potency. And I gave the example of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who said, the only reason we worship Krishna is because Radharani loves her so much. And I explained about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he wanted to do his worship in Kurukshetra. Why? Because it was the place of Radharani. He said, because we are Radhika Dasyam, the servants of Radharani, and it's her moment of greatest need, because she was meeting Krishna after 96 years, but she was in separation and union, because in that setting, Krishna could not manifest, or God could not manifest himself as her lover. So we explained something, but you could also understand when I'm speaking this, and I, wow, okay, can these people understand? You know, but at the same sense, I wanted to glorify Radharani, but somehow it worked out well. The people that did appreciate something of it. I just think because they're such a qualified audience. Really impressive people, disciplined, well-behaved. So it was really nice to have Radhastami there. And it was great to be able to engage all these devotees so intimately in the direct service of Radharani by cooking at their homes, you know, in upstate New York and New Jersey, and then coming all the way there to the city and then participating. Abhishek was done very, very beautifully. And we saw the next day in the yoga studio, Kastuba, he does the worship there every morning. And then at 9:30, when everybody's gone, he told me there were three or four of the yoga students there that were just sitting in front of Radharani, just looking at Radharani. And one lady somehow found out she's now chanting 8 rounds. So it's nice to see our teachings and the mission of Prabhupada you know, spread in that way. And one other thing was really nice, that somehow or other, there's a lot of children there. I mean, Kulpaviksha has 5 children, Gopikishore has 4 children, Kanchikishori's 2, Govardhan Lal's 2, Madan Mohan. There's so many children there, and it kind of, it's anyway, somehow the parents managed to keep them under control. It's not easy. But one thing they did is during the class, they just had all these colorful beads. And each child, and I thought the parents and children had left. It was so quiet during the class. I actually thought that. Oh, I said, this is too bad. But then I went back there right after the class, and they had all these colorful beads, and each child could string his own bead garland. And then it was really nice. Right after the class, they all came up, and they were able to offer the garland to Radharani. And Kastuba, you know, made it very, very serious. He took each garland and put it in the the hands of Radharani or touched her feet and then gave it back to the children. So that was also nice. Now back to Queen Kunti, which is such a wonderful story to read because we're seeing the heart of a devotee. And I'm thinking like this section, which is just, we see Krishna leaving, and when Krishna's leaving, the sentiments of the devotees become very, very prominent. That's the nature of the mode of the mood of separation, the emotion for the object of love becomes very, very pronounced, and that which is outside of one starts to manifest even more within one's heart. So we're seeing the heart of the devotee, and it's a very beautiful thing because it's pure love. And everyone wants pure love. Everyone wants to be loving and have his heart or her heart filled up with that love. That's the aspiration. And we see the reciprocation between Krishna and his devotees, and that's our eternal aspiration. So Krishna is about to leave, and Kunti's heart becomes expressed in prayers. It's again, it's the love becomes expressed in prayers, which is also manifestation of the intelligence, how to glorify. It's very nice. A poet is using his intelligence to glorify poet. In this case, Krishna. She becomes very poetic. It's the quality of a devotee, but it's manifest from the heart. But the desire to please activates a very pronounced manifestation of the intelligence in terms of the craft of words. And through the heart of Queen Kunti, the poetry naturally arises. So what I thought I'm going to do here to begin is, because we've been discussing these verses, I'm going to read them in different sections that I put, first 18 to 22. And you can all meditate. Now, I wrote a little bit of a, kind of like a summary, what I thought her main point was here, but I'm going to read this. Namasye Purusham 18. Purusham Tvadyam Ishvaram Prakrite Param Alaksham Sarva Bhutanam Antir Bahir Avashtitam. O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. Maya javani kakshanam agya toksha jamavyayam nalakshyashe mudhadrisha nato natyadaro yata. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor, covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators, who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha Nandagopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namah. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudeva, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and senses. Nama Pankajanabhaya, Nama Pankajamalane, Nama Pankajanetraya, Namaste Pankajangrehe. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, and his glance is as cool as a lotus, and his feet are engraved with lotuses. So I wrote here, this is what I kind of thought, this one, that God is inconceivable and can only be known by revelation in response to a devotee's love, but he still remains God. So, O Rishikesh, Master of the Senses and Lord of Lords, you have released your mother, Devaki, who is long in prison and distressed by the envious King Kamsa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. My dear Krishna, your Lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile into the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatam. Vipata shantutashashvat tatatata jagatguru bhavato darsanam yatsyat apana bhavadarsanam. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again, for seeing you means we will no longer see repeated birth and death. Janmaishvarya Shruta Sribir Edamada Madapunam Navahatya Badaitum Vai Tvamakinchana Gochara. My Lord, your Lordship can be easily approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, higher education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So I did this really quickly this morning. I wrote, Krishna favors those who are helpless, and thus devotees, because devotees in that condition, and Krishna favors those who are helpless. Devotees in that condition become more attached to Krishna because they are feeling his love, and thus calamities are welcome. Okay, now we'll just get to the verses today. Maybe that, I didn't really have time to write that so clearly. So we'll start a little bit of verse back here, that the Lord can be approached only by those who are materially exhausted. Krishna is purchased by those who value only him. When your love has that type of exclusivity, and one-pointedness and chastity, when you have actual sharanagati, when ananyagatitvam, that you have no other shelter but your relationship and love for Krishna, you purchase Krishna. And therefore, this is said in the opposite way, but you can't be approached for those who value so many other things, who have faith in so many other things as their shelter, who have faith in material progress as their shelter. It's not that you can't engage in material progress, but you shouldn't have faith that that's your shelter. Or you shouldn't have faith that your high birth, or your respectable birth, or your opulence, or your education, or your beauty, that that's your shelter, that that's what's actually going to satisfy your heart. And what Kunti is mentioning here, and she's explaining the previous verse. Her previous verse said, I want those calamities. Why? Because if we have all these things, we tend to take shelter of them and not to take shelter of Krishna. She said, when I was so distressed, I took shelter of you. And naturally, Krishna reciprocates. You feel the presence of Krishna. So, And also, he's Kunti's saying, and then there's bhakti, there's sincere feeling. There's a real quality to my devotion. When I have sharanagati, when I actually have that feeling in my heart and that faith in my heart that this is shelter, Krishna. And without Krishna, I have no shelter, no matter what else I have. So Prabhupada describes that in the purport so beautifully. He says, there is not the least, he says, actually the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency. It's a purified one. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, where a man who utters the same name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he's incapable of uttering the name in quality. So, and therefore, if your material situation creates a false sense of shelter that hinders that quality of surrender or taking shelter in Krishna, then those things become material disqualifications. And when they are decreased, it may indicate that this disease of ahankara, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, the disease of material desires is reduced. It's actually a good sign. It's a good sign because it may indicate one or two things. One, that a devotee has realized that they're not shelter, and therefore, simple living, high thinking, he takes what he needs. What is that famous verse? The first canto. A devotee takes as much as he needs. So it can either indicate that the devotee, that the simple life, you know, is indicated, and you see the devotee has given up these things in a sense, externally even. You can say, he's becoming more simple and detached because he's more dependent on Krishna. Or Krishna sees that by taking these things away, the devotee will take more shelter of him. So Queen Kunti is kind of making this point here. And then in the same verse, she just really directly states that Krishna can only be purchased of those who vow. I am based unto you who are the property of the materially impoverished. And of course, Prabhupada makes clear point that that's the consciousness. He's going to make the point. Consciousness of being Krishna's servant and seeing everything, even one things that are in one's possession as the for the service of Krishna. And I remember this, and I don't know how this is going to relate, but there's one sannyasi. He's in the Gaudiya Math, and he travels around America. I think his children are in Boston going to school. He's an interesting guy. I knew this person in Vrindavan for about 20 years. And he has a temple right across from the Ramakrishna Mandir called the Mongiri Mandir. And he's from the king. The person is actually the king of Mongir. It happens to be the province where Charasandha was ruling. But this person actually is the legitimate king of Mongir. I think his name is Sadhu Maharaj now. And his grandfather was a great Vaishnava, and he was a member of the British Parliament. I guess that time they had the Rajas were part of the Parliament. And his great grandfather would chant 64 rounds before he would go into the parliament. And when he would come to Vrindavan, although he was the king, in Vrindavan he would only do madhukari. He would just go beg for his food. But he had this picture of his father, and I think it's still in his grandfather, it's still in the temple. His grandfather was standing in front of the parliament building in India, sitting up straight with his kind of Nehru jacket and perfect Gaudiya Vaishnav tilak that I don't know, for some reason people in the Western people don't seem to be able to do it that way. I don't know how they do it. Just like drawn so straight, so sharp by the peak. And he has his bead bag. And he was, I don't know how this was, but he had this Rolls Royce. Was like, you see those altars that are gold and silver relief work? That was his Rolls Royce. I don't know. This probably defeats the whole point of the verse. But anyway. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever, not to aggregate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become material impoverished. Sometimes. Krishna can give, or Krishna can take away. Whatever Krishna does is to bring the devotee closer to him. It doesn't mean he has to take away, but obviously there's some correlation between material possessions and attachment. The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to more and more illusion, to be more and more illusion about the aim of life. That's the prayer. So, my obeisance unto you with the property of the materially impoverished. And this is a very interesting purport by Prabhupada, because he says you can't become a factual renouncer. Because it's the nature of the living entity as a sentient being to have desire. It's just whether the desire is materially or spiritual. Material desire is selfishness, spiritual desire is pure selflessness. But in either case, one has something. And therefore you can't renounce in that sense. You can renounce in one sense, of course. Prabhupada said, a living being is finished as soon as there's nothing to possess. Therefore, a living being cannot be in the real sense of the term renouncer. You sacrifice something for something more valuable. The Prabhupada's talking about the devotee possesses love of Krishna. And of course, you can't become a factual renouncer in the sense that nothing belongs to you anyway. So the real renunciation is the renunciation of the conception of proprietorship. And then Prabhupada in the purport tells this story of Sanatana Goswami, when the person came to ask for the most valuable thing. And it's an interesting story, and the Sanatana Goswami points to the refuse, and the person takes it, but then he's saying, if he's kept this in the refuse, he must have something more valuable. And when the person comes, Sanatana Goswami says, throw that away, I'll give you the most valuable thing, and then he gives the person the holy name. So the Sanatana Goswami is you know, showing that one is a devotee can be very, very detached. Or he's showing also the allure of material objects to create that sense of possessiveness, and that as a renunciate, he had a much higher thing, which was the holy name of Krishna. He had faith in that, and therefore he set that example. Although, as Prabhupada made in the purport, by his spiritual position, he would be able to see everything in relationship to Krishna and use it. But he set the example for people who don't have such spiritual vision, who will not only not be able to use those things in Krishna's service, but will become allured. We can discuss that a little bit later. Wait one second here. I just want to. And Prabhupada also, and he's going to make this point, because Kunti's praying here, like, you know, that the highest point is to really value only thing Krishna and things in relationship to Krishna. And therefore, you can ultimately value everything if you have the consciousness and see everything in relationship to Krishna. But Prabhupada, in his very, very practical way, makes a comment on material situation in the present context, how people unfortunately are being diverted in so many ways by things which have no value. He mentions the attempt to reach the moon as another example of spoiling energy, because even if the moon is reached, the problems of life will not be solved. So Prabhupada cuts right through. What is this, going to the moon? What? What problems are you going to solve? You haven't solved the real problem. And then Prabhupada makes, I guess, he wrote this in the late 50s or something. In the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at the cost of 50 cents. And there are so many unwanted things which are products of material conceptions. So Prabhupada is seeing that the devotees, they don't want to waste their time. Prabhupada's so strong, simple living, high thinking. And why, he said, such material assets are products of the three modes of material nature. So why are these things, what are the modes of material nature? The modes of material nature are the shapes of the sound of the sense objects to fulfill your material desires. There's basically three qualities of material desire. There's a quality of ignorance, which makes you want to enjoy lethargy and non-activity. There's a spirit of enjoyment of passion that makes you want to enjoy intense fruitive activity. And there's a spirit of enjoyment of goodness, which is always mixed with passion because it means an attachment to that goodness, of wanting to enjoy peacefulness and enlightenment. So everything's in the shape of these modes. So the whole material civilization is creating so many things just in the shapes of particular sounds. Music is in everything's in the modes. In a particular flavor of a spirit of enjoyment to attract you to the material conception. And that's the material civilization. And when one gets caught in that, Prabhupada said, they foil spiritual energy. And thus, the more we possess such products of material nature, the less we possess such products of material nature, the more we have a good chance for spiritual progress. A very just simple point. These things are created to increase the conception that I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. That's the basis of material civilization. And therefore, as a devotee becomes advanced in knowledge and detachment based on his devotion and spirit of wanting to serve Krishna, then naturally these things become anartha or valueless. And he's surrounded with less and less things. Of course, there's the principle of yukta vairagi, which is balanced attachment, that we don't reject the things that can be used in Krishna's service. But I always tell that story. It's written in my journal that I guess it was the late 80s when they had that almost hierarchical royal system of the zonal acharyas, at least in Europe, it was very prominent in that way. It was almost like an army. So one of the acharyas was taking over in Vrindavan, and, you know, because it was kind of really political and military, they wanted to make me one of their soldiers rather than have to fight me, which they wound up doing anyway. But so they gave me the uniform that they had at that time.
You know, there was a certain kind of sweater they gave me, and they gave me a Rolex watch, and I guess it was Birkenstock shoes at the time. I was just a, you know, poor sadhu in Vrindavan. So he gave me this watch. I said, okay, Yukta Vairagya, let me wear this nice Rolex watch. And then I went to visit a sadhu in Vrindavan. And somehow or other, I wanted to ask him questions on philosophy. And I asked him, what about Yukta Vairagya, balanced detachment? He said, just like to tell time, you need a watch. He said, 100 rupees. You know, here's this watch. I guess it must have been, you know, tens of thousands, or boy, I put that watch kind of behind my back. So that sense is there. And so this is what Kunti is discussing. I don't mind when the things are taken away in a very humble way, she's saying, because I see that they're false shelter, and I have no choice but to take shelter of you. And in that helpless condition, because you're a person, Krishna, and you see my need, you respond to that need. And when I see that response, that shelter that you give to those who are in need and can express that need with sincerity, and that's our chanting. The chanting, the real chanting, as Bhaktisiddhanta said, it's not lip deep, it's heart deep. The real chanting is that person who is calling out for Krishna with shelter. And Kunti's saying, I see the sincerity of those people who really have this realization, who really value you and their relationship with you, and have faith that that's your real shelter. And I see how much love and attachment I felt in my heart, in my calamity, when I can only take shelter of you. And that's my value system. My value system is what brings me closer to Krishna. And for me, I need those situations. I'm so fallen. I need those situations where you take away these things that create within me a false sense that this material situation is the eternal world. The relation, take those away so I can feel that sense of love, a shelter from you in the form of your mercy, and inspires attachment. That's my goal. That's what I want. And therefore, let these calamities happen again and again and again. Why? Because those who get illusioned with the material accoutrements of great birth and beauty and wealth and position, they can't have this sense of Sharanagati and sincerely call for you, who are the shelter of the people who take shelter of you. So she's praying like this, and we see the heart of a devotee. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Gail, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well I'll be able to word this, but...
You generally do a good job.
The modes of material nature are the shapes of things...
Go ahead.
Are the shapes or the objects that are meant to give us or induce us to enjoy selfishly. So, let me see if I can take an example. I don't know, you know, a dish of spaghetti.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, you can see it as an object in the mode of passion, you know, meant to encourage us to enjoy...
Well, it depends how much spice you put in, Gail.
Well, that's how you put in just enough spice to encourage you to, you know, enjoy your tongue celibacy independently of Christian
Gaia.
So if, you know, in other words, that's, the dish of spaghetti is in the mode of passion. But so then, if you use that same, then how is it then that you can say that same dish of spaghetti can be, you know, also prasadam?
Okay.
You know, it's
okay, let me explain that there, that the whole purpose when you, you see, you don't get affected by the modes when you change your conception, right? In other words, you know, Prabhupada said a Paramahamsa, right? Paramahamsa. You know, a man who's a Paramahamsa can be even in the, you know, room full of naked ladies and not be affected, right? It, you know, if it's not in you, it doesn't affect you. You see things in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So when you offer things to Krishna, the whole thing of karma yoga is you take the objects of and you start to offer to, you start to see it as Krishna's, and therefore you don't approach it in a spirit of enjoyment. When it says everything's in the modes, and what does it mean? For example, music, right? There's music in goodness, there's music in passion, there's music in ignorance. In other words, there's a different sound that will inspire a different desire. So even there's music in the mode of goodness, and it will inspire goodness. Now that could be a platform for transcendence, but it's still within the modes because there's attachment here for that particular shape or sound. So, I mean, in terms of dealing with the world, we try to put the sounds and shapes and forms of goodness. Even when we're eating, right, there's foods in the mode of goodness. There's foods in the mode of passion. There's foods in the mode of ignorance. So this is just dealing with the modes. So we're trying to cultivate the mode of goodness. So, for example, you know, when someone keeps a place very clean, it's more the mode of goodness. But even, you know, the times of day are in the modes. The morning is more in goodness, so we try to wake early and associate with that. And it means we're in the world because we want to enjoy separate from Krishna, and therefore we're in a world that is in the modes and will have the tendency, as mentioned in these purports, to inspire independence from God in the sense that I'm the enjoyer and I'm the controller. So that's the nature of the world. And so we have to use things in the world. We have to also work through the modes. We can also purify the modes. A lot of vanashrava is what? You take a particular mode of a nature, a particular activity. Let's say the Kshatriya likes to rule. So that's basically mode of passion. But what he does is he regulates it. So regulation in things is more in the goodness. So you also purify yourself in the modes by vanashram. You take your proclivities, propensities, and tendencies, and as much as possible you try to regulate it. And by regulating it, you're associating more with a higher mode and purifying yourself. And therefore that example was given that a spark of fire, when it falls into the wet grass, it extinguishes. When it falls into the dry grass, the regular grass, it can alight or extinguish. And when it falls in very dry grass, it can alight again into fire. And that's analogous to the nature of the soul associating with different modes. When you associate with the mode of goodness, there's a chance to transcend it and awaken your spiritual qualities. So we try to deal with them. The modes are here. That's a fact. So it's a fact we try to cultivate. So if you're talking about food, we offer it to Krishna where we take it in the highest sense, not in the spirit of enjoyment, but we take it in the mode of, oh, how Krishna has enjoyed, right? So we're tasting. We're not even tasting for our own personal enjoyment, But we're enjoying the taste because we're seeing that Krishna has eaten this wonderful food. So you know, on the highest sense, you transcend the modes. You have a complete spiritual consciousness. So even though you're having sensual experiences, you're not taking those for personal enjoyment. You're experiencing them in relationship to the pleasure of Krishna. That's a very, very high concept. But generally, we try to work through the modes. So even when we cook, we try to cook in the mode of goodness. We try to keep everything very, very clean. We try to cook in goodness. We try to prepare things in a fine way. And we try to use foods in goodness. And therefore, you know, we don't make it excessively hot because that's passion. So we're doing two things as a devotee. One, we're trying to cultivate the mode of goodness so that we can transcend, and therefore we're trying to associate with the mode of goodness in our activities, in the sounds that we hear, etc. And as devotees, we're not only trying to associate with the mode of goodness, we're trying to transcend by a service attitude. And even Narada Muni, we read that previously, when he had darshan of Krishna and then couldn't have darshan of Narayan again, and he tried and tried again, and then there was the voice from the sky that says, you cannot see me again because there's some material taint and you're insufficient in service. So the material taint was what? He was attached to the mode of goodness. So ultimately we try to cultivate goodness to help us transcend, but ultimately we even have to become detached from that. And he was not complete in service, which means the service attitude. Okay, Gail?
Yeah, so I mean, is it correct to therefore say that actually matter is always in the modes, but, you know, I think that's what you said, that whether we're affected by it depends on our consciousness, the consciousness with which we approach matter. The fact that, you know, we have a spiritual approach to matter does not change the fact that the matter is still always made out of mold.
But it becomes irrelevant then, in one sense. I think that you say ultimately, it's you see, there's two things. The modes are within us. That means our spirit of enjoyment. We have goodness, passion, and they're always competing. And they're external also. The external shapes of things inspire particular desires. The particular music will make us lethargic, will make us passionate. And, you know, just like in war, they have some kind of music. It's probably passionate, you know. They want passion. Yeah, so it inspires something within us, yeah. But yeah, ultimately, if you approach things in the proper way, I mean, if you approach things in the proper way, they won't affect you. But it technically speaking, they'll still be in a particular mode of nature. In the sense, it's inert in itself. It means it has the potential to inspire within one a particular desire who has those desires within himself.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean that it's in the modes? It's inert. It's in the modes for someone who's in the modes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Okay?
Very good.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions? What? Who's that? Any other questions?
Yes, Maharaj, this is Nanda Dulal.
Yes.
Somebody was asking you, and I would rather ask you after that.
I can't hear you. What?
Hare Krishna. Okay, Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisance.
Yeah.
My question is, you know, I was wondering, you know, because I like Kunti Devi's prayer, you know, that's
yeah.
what relevance she had a relationship with Krishna compared to Arjuna? I know that he was like, you know, his friendly relationship. But what relationship she had with Krishna? Miss Mellow Wife.
Could be, huh?
Rasa.
Well, I don't really, I haven't read it, I don't remember hearing it, but I'm just going to say there's also Sankula. Sankula means, it's describing the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, they're mixed, like Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev was parental, you know, mixed with service. So I would just say, Kunti has some kind of mixed rasa. It, obviously, there's some parental, but she's also, you know, has some mixture there of servant, you know, in her terms of her prayers.
I'm thinking because the way she prayed, this is looks, and for me, you know, I'm very, you know, fallen. Person, I can't, you know, even comment.
I can't, you know, I think your connection, I can't hear you really clearly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Maharaj, I'll send you an email.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thanks, Nandu. Anybody else like to ask a question?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, please accept my obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
I want to ask something about Om Tat Sat. We were talking about yesterday in Bhakti Sastri. And
I wasn't talking about it.
No. We
you were talking. Okay.
We were talking about
in
Bhakti Sastri. So Om Tat Sat is all inclusive for transcendence. So can we chant Tat Sat along with Hare Krishna, or do we already have to be there? Or that's not bona fide?
Well, the thing is, if you follow the acharyas in terms of doing kirtan, it's recommended that you chant the names of God in which you have a particular relationship with, and that's the best for bhakti. In other words, when it described Padasevana, which also includes visiting holy places, it says you visit the holy places which are connected with the Lord that you worship. So if we're going to chant the holy names, it's best to chant obviously the names of Krishna and Nittai Gaur and Radha Krishna, etc. But I mean, I would also have to look at that section in Bhagavad Gita and Om Tat Sat, because there's also Pranava mantra, and there's also primary and secondary names. And primary names mean the names of God, there's the qualities of God in terms of his relationship, or also more, and then secondary indicate his position. So why chant names that indicate God's position when you can chant names that indicate his loving relationships, which are more inspirational for love? So, you know, there's also Pranava mantra, Om, you know, which is also very powerful, and Om also, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it indicates Radha Krishna and their love also. You can also look at these names in ways. There's a whole section of... you know, you can also look at the names of Shiva to indicate Krishna, because Shiva means all auspicious, and he's more all auspicious than Krishna. So in terms of devotees, that's, you know, our why chant? We have the Maha Mantra. We have these names. So other things, yeah, they can also be chanted, but we can understand they won't have the same effect as the primary names in terms of developing love. Maybe some of those names can be chanted for a sense of reverence or some detachment. That's fine. And Om means pranava. Pranava means va this, not pra means prakriti. It means not of matter. So it's kind of, it has a some type of also in personal conception of God also there. Also, it's kind of, it's spiritual, it's not matter, but it doesn't really define what that spirit is. So it doesn't have the same conception also directly that it's related to a personal God. So obviously there's only one God, whether it's, if you see Brahman, you see Paramatma, you see Bhagavan, it's one entity which is manifest in different ways. But if we have access to the more intimate understanding and deeper, then we choose more to access that through our chanting and devotion, and also we follow the acharyas, what they have said and what they have recommended, and that gives special potency too, which is why kirtan is so powerful in this age, because it is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, every process is the same in terms of the goal, which is to focus the mind on God or Krishna. If you can focus the mind on Krishna, you get the benefit. And one may do it in one way or another, but kirtan specifically, one of the glories of kirtan is it's given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's also connected to guru, it's connected to acharya, so there's an element of mercy when you follow that line. Did I answer your question?
Oh, you more than answered my question. I understand that, you know, Hare Krishna is primary, and that is the only way that we're going to have that personal relationship with God.
Yeah, it's more inspirational. Yes, but again, nam nam akari bahudan nijasarva shakti. That God has many names, many invested his potency in it.
Well, I was kind of looking at the tat-sat as a boost.
As a what?
Something, as a booster or something, or something to help along or something like that. But actually, it doesn't, because if it's secondary, then,
yeah,
you know, why bother?
Well, there's
so
things
much.
That could, yeah, right. I mean,
yeah,
we don't need more in one sense when we're doing mantra than the Hare,
right,
Krishna mantra. Because that's included within it.
Right.
That's also included within,
right,
it. Everything,
right,
is there.
Right.
Within the holy names.
Right.
Okay, thank you
no,
very
I
much.
No, I wasn't trying to get away from it. I was just trying to get some
No. I understand. It was we're trying to understand things more deeply. Yeah, I understand it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Actually, let's see what time it is now. Yeah, I'm going to have to head out. On Sunday, we have up here in Albany a program, too. But would anybody like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Tamiya Nimai.
Hare Bhav. Tamiya?
Hare Bhav.
Those garlands were very beautiful that you made for Radha Damodar.
The whole festival was so nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
I am so grateful for having both the festivals, Janmashtami and Radhashtami there. It's a tremendous pickup.
Great.
It was absolutely wonderful.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, Jaini Tai here.
Jaini Tai, maybe if you're, when I'm driving up, I'll give you a call.
What time is that?
In 5 minutes.
Okay, sure.
Okay, we'll just touch base, okay?
Sounds good. Hare.
Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Govardhan. Hey, Govardhan, I got your message that you were on the way to the program, but it couldn't make it somehow.
Yeah, it was an adventure, but I didn't make it, but...
Okay. I'll try to get you the directions much in advance. But, okay. That was a last thing. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna,
Haribo, Maharaj.
Haribo, who's this?
This is Paramananda.
Hey, Paramananda, Haribo.
Maharaj, I got your book.
You did?
Yeah, thanks so much for having it sent to me. I've been reading it.
Shastra's doing that nice service, too. He sends it
out.
Good.
The cover is absolutely stunning.
Just an interesting point. At the program yesterday that I did, as you remember, up here in the barn, that professor from Bard came.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought some of her students. And I gave her a copy of my book. And she teaches pilgrimage.
Really?
That's one of the courses, yeah. So she's going to use parts of the book in the course, too.
Wow, that's
amazing. And the first thing is, when she saw the cover, you know, everything, people really like the cover. I just hope the contents is as good. Okay, thanks, Paramananda.
Okay, Maharaj, thanks.
Nice you're listening. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hi, Walmart.
Who's that?
Bhagavati. Hare Krishna. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Good. Beth came to the program because I know you visited with her, and she came up here too yesterday, and she also did part of the kirtan, which was nice too. So.
Oh, nice. She loves
yeah.
kirtan.
Yeah. Okay.
Great,
thank
thanks.
You for coming
Hare
on. Hare Krishna.